This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
By popular demand, Place to Be Nation Wrestling returns to the Dirty South for Talkin' WCW, an episodic wrestler showcase designed to educate, evaluate, and entertain, with matches spanning the intimate stage of Techwood Studios to the heights of Space Mountain. Talkin' WCW presents the best, worst, and most surreal offerings from World Championship Wrestling. So cast your gaze to the Turnertron with hosts Jennifer Smith, Tim Capel, and Greg Phillips.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to Talkin' WCW. This is a spinoff podcast from, you know, a very popular and amazing show. With myself and Tim Capel, we decided that we needed to not just talk pop, but we wanted to talk WCW. I'm going to let Tim tell you how that works out. Hi, Tim.
Yes. Hi, Jenny. Thank you so much. So, by crossover popular demand, I guess you could say, we are now doing a WCW podcast here on the wrestling feed. And we have a third man in the booth here tonight who we should bring in right now. Otherwise, we'll get carried away and keep talking.
Yes.
And this intro will go way too long. And our third man will be left twisting in the wind. He is Greg Phillips of the Hard Traveling Fanboys podcast. Greg, are you happy to be here with us?
You know, I couldn't be happier, dude, to be hanging and banging with Jenny and Tim, bro.
I am very pleased to be here. I'm looking forward to this show. I'm pretty excited about this concept of talking WCW, what we've got planned, and I think it's a really good idea, a really strong concept, and it's going to fill the niche that we have here on the wrestling feed of podcasts about wrestling.
Yes, it's an underserved need on Place to Be Nation Wrestling, talking about wrestling promotions.
And, well, I mean, this one is unique because I'm here, right? And I attract the thirsty males of our group, and you know, I think that's gonna really help with our reach. What do you guys think?
It might even help with our reach arounds.
It might.
Yes, and our penetration, mm-hmm. No doubt. I was really trying not to say that.
That was good. I liked
it. Oh God, why am I like this? Okay, so. This podcast came about faster than the Fire Festival, I feel
like. I think it did. And I should point out that another difference between our podcast and others is most podcasts here talk about wrestling. Mm. We are not interested in that. We're here to talk about wrestling.
Mm.
That's right. Now Southern wrestling.
We did go through a whole process to try to name this show. And, you know, we threw away such things as... WCW with Friends, which we thought that might be a little derivative of other shows, but then we decided to be derivative of our own show, which I think makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, self-referential, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do have a certain fondness for a potential title that was also a little bit derivative, the Dangerless Alliance.
I like that one, too. I almost went with that one, but, you know... This is, I think it has a lot of good potential to, like I said, be the crossover that we need right now.
That's exactly right. With results that may mirror those of the Fire Festival, but that remains to be seen. Or the Far Festival.
The Far Festival. I don't care about that WCW. I'm going to see the Fire Festival.
Yes, we'll have many...
This is my first full-time podcast outside of the hard-traveling purvoys.
I know.
Oh, my goodness.
I feel like we shouldn't be sleeping on that. Mm-hmm. You know, you're a big get. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you.
Oh,
when
yeah.
talk about how this whole thing came about. Jenny, you hit me up, mm-hmm. I guess about a week ago on Messenger, like just saying, I believe your message to me said, hey, would you like to do a WCW podcast with me? You can totally say no.
Because I know how you and other people are about, you know, like, somebody asked me to do something and I agreed to it, but like, I really don't want to do it, so I'm just going to complain about it. So I didn't want to get into that sort of situation.
Well, it occurs to me, I don't think I actually said yes or no. We just started talking about it, mm-hmm. and then Greg did say yes, and I was like, I don't think Greg's going to do it.
But, yeah, I was surprised too.
That's our way of saying that, Jenny, you didn't ask anyone else before Greg, right?
No.
Okay. So, Greg, you are officially the first choice of Talking WCW and of the listeners, I am sure. This is a momentous occasion.
That's incredible, guys, because you know, I got to be honest, they're knocking down my door every day now. Every time I go to the airport, people are pulling me aside asking me about when are you going to talk about WCW? And I finally have something I can tell them concrete. I'm going to be talking WCW on a somewhat regular basis with my good friends, Tim and Jenny. So I'm honored to have been asked into this role, and I can only hope that I can live up to the hefty and lofty standards of the Talking Pop crew. Jenny and Tim, you guys have such a successful ongoing podcast with a dedicated audience and interesting topics, and I'll just be an old lump of coal over here trying to contribute my 2 cents every now and again.
We ain't gonna have it.
Hamburger.
There you go. I do hope that you continue to have these airport rendezvous.
Oh, every week. You can't. I have a pretty good authority, Tim, that I'll be having a lot of airport rendezvous before each recording of this.
Oh.
When you travel as much to Vancouver as I do, it racks up opportutities. Exactly. Do you think that we might have any 1-800-COLLECT-ROAD reports?
I think that's a distinct possibility. I mean, we will probably have a lot of celebrity wrestler cameos, at least I hope. Talk about rendezvous, a lot of run-ins, if you will.
Right.
That would be very much encouraged and smiled upon. So we should talk about what exactly we're going to be doing with this podcast. And the concept is very simple, but actually quite
complex.
Thank you for that.
I love you for that, Tony.
Look, Conrad Thompson popping into the studio here. What we're going to be doing is taking a different wrestler each episode, a wrestler of our mutual agreed upon choosing, and each of us will select a match of that wrestler and watch it independently, come together, talk about the matches we watched. And this is going to be sort of a departure for me in the sense that I don't think I'm good at getting into like the nitty gritty of just match analysis. Mm-hmm. It's not really what I mean on a live watch. Sure, when it's right there in front of you and you can talk about it, but to actually almost do homework in a sense and take notes and come back and discuss amongst ourselves is something that's, it's a skill that I don't know that I've really fully honed. So, boy, what a pitch for this podcast.
I know,
I'm
right?
Doing something I don't think I'm very good at. But I just thought it'd be good to take that up as a challenge. And
we'll see
how that turns out.
And I don't think people are going to be listening to us for our, you know, breakdown of the minutiae of the catch-as-catch-can style of wrestling. I think it's more just for our ability to bullshit our way through damn near anything.
Yeah, yeah. It'll definitely hone that skill, if nothing else. So, with that being said, should we introduce who our first subject of Talking WCW is?
All right. Well, so the inspiration for me is, like I've talked about before, like the first show that kind of got me started on this whole journey was Uncensored 95. And there was a match on that show that had Arn Anderson and Johnny B. Badd. And it was a boxing match.
Yes.
Yeah. And so immediately I was enamored with Arn Anderson, like, from that show. And then I remember you guys would send me like promos, like videos of him, and I just like lost my shit about Arn Anderson. So I'm like, we're definitely going to start out with Daddy Arn, as I call him, because
well, there's a Venn diagram of interests for you, Jenny, that I think is no secret, that he's just sort of sitting in the intersection of the two circles. He hits on a lot of those interests for you, and with good reason, no doubt.
I mean, I got to be honest, though. I mean, I've been watching Arn Anderson since I was a little kid, and in that entire time, Jenny might be the first person I've ever met that has referred to Arn as Daddy Arn or in any sort of sexually, you know, stimulating manner.
Well, I mean, I don't know what to tell you when it comes to that, but I'm sure I'm not the only female that's felt that way, especially in his prime.
That's true. You know, Arn was known to give something we used to call a cat bath.
Oh.
Come on now.
I don't know what a cat bath is. I'm just reporting what Dusty once said.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was something wholesome.
Yeah, well, speaking of things that are wholesome, I will just say that Arn Anderson, he's a man of average carpentry skills. No, he just has this quiet sort of charisma about him, right? He's not the big bombastic personality that Ric Flair is, although they complement one another very well. He just has that aura that draws you in when he speaks, just his delivery, his kind of quiet intonation. It's similar to like a Jake Roberts in a way. It just, you know, captures your attention and you hang on to his every word. Obviously, as a wrestler, he would be a great credit to really any promotion in his prime. He's the type of dude that you just want someone like that on your roster, whether you're going to push him to the top and make him like your world champion. You know, that's debatable, but you always want an Arn Anderson just on your roster that you can throw out there with anybody, have a great match. You know, he's one of those just really well-rounded guys who could do it all. And because of your fandom, Jenny, of Arn Anderson, we thought, which is well documented and well publicized as well, I should say, we figured we'd better go ahead and get him out of the way early, because everyone would just be waiting on this one otherwise. Like, when's the Arn Anderson episode? When's the Arn Anderson episode? So, yeah.
When the Arn Anderson episode? When's the Arn Anderson episode?
Damn.
He had them carpentry skills.
What? One of the first videos y'all made me watch, it was like him, and he was outside, and he was by a truck, like on a construction site. What was that from? Was that, wasn't from Uncensored, was it? Because I was looking for it today, and I couldn't find it.
I'm guessing that would have been from the 80s, from, you know, one of those Jim Crockett, like, on-location horseman promos, maybe?
Maybe. But it was so intense. I just remember, like...
Oh, yeah.
It was just, like, he believed every fucking word he said.
Yes. That's such a key term, because I love modern wrestling as much as anybody. It's still my favorite thing in the world. But, like, very few people in modern wrestling can make me believe that they believe what they're saying.
Right.
Arn did that every time, no matter how ridiculous his feud was, no matter if he was feuding with the freaking Renegade, he could make me believe that the Renegade was a legitimate competitor and that he was going to hurt him in their match. And the other thing about Arn is, like, he had the ability to play any role that he was put into. If he was asked to be a babyface, if he was asked to be a heel, and I would argue he's at his best as a heel, certainly, but he could play a babyface as well. But when you watch these matches that we picked out tonight, one thing that stood out to me in each of them is his bumping and his movement and his I'm a big guy on like body movement in wrestling, like particularly among heels, for how it makes the babyface look so much better if he hits the heel and the heel moves his body in such a way that makes it look like he was, you know, shot out of a cannon or something, you know, like it. Arn had that ability to make the babyface look like a threat in every situation. You said it perfect earlier, Tim. He's almost like the wrestler's wrestler. This just perfect all around promos and everything. And the thing that surprised me when I met Arn a couple years ago is that he's a lot bigger than I ever thought he was on TV. On TV, he always looked like he was just kind of, you know, a little on the short side, a little on the smaller side. But you meet him in real life, and he's huge. He's built like a tank.
Yeah.
Mm. I can't imagine meeting him in person. That would be amazing. Anyway.
I touched his hand, too.
Oh, my jeez.
Oh.
Then you didn't wash it again after that.
I still have it.
Mm, good.
That's why it's gangrenous now. But I don't know if gangrene actually works that way. Any sure biologists out there, you can send an email to at JRsBBQ if you have any
questions. Hey, now. This ain't the HTF, friend.
Funny enough, we have the same, you know, we're just sharing email accounts.
Yeah.
And Twitter handles, too.
It'll be at Tony Schiavone on this show, okay?
Oh,
that's right. We haven't even introduced ourselves formally in our group. We are known collectively, the three of us, as the ships at sea.
Yes. Although only one of us has been tweeted directly by Tony Schiavone.
I know.
Me. Well, and he's gotten a phone call from Tony Schiavone.
Exactly, yeah.
You've actually spoken to the man himself.
I did, and I froze, and it was like, I had all these things I wanted to say, and then when he called it, just threw me off, and then I didn't really say any of it, and it was a disaster in my mind.
Oh man, that should have been a great that should have been like a highlight of your life.
It was, but I just feel like I blew it, you know, like, and he sounded tired, and I didn't want to like fangirl all over him, you know.
Right.
So I don't know, it was great, but I gotta order some more t-shirts. Maybe I'll get a second
chance. Know now you just gotta buy some more t-shirts, and yeah, You can have a do-over. This is possible. All right. Should we introduce our first match of the evening?
Let's do it.
Okay. This is a match that was selected by me. And it is Arn and Ole Anderson, the Minnesota Wrecking Crew, versus the Rock and Roll Express from Starrcade 1986, the Night of the Skywalkers.
Yes. Yeah, what the shit was that?
We're off to a
I love
rollicking start.
I love Dusty's cheesy-ass subtitles. I love them so much.
Amazing. So you've got the Night of the Skywalkers. You've got Future Shock. You've got, well, certainly a flair for the gold.
Chi-Town Heat.
Chi-Town Heat, yeah, yeah. Oh, man. But they never, I don't think they ever topped Night of the Skywalkers.
It's real simple, boys. This was my pitch for it. Ladies and gentlemen, the American Dream Dusty Rhodes. All right. His thoughts on Arn Anderson tonight. It was going to be Starrcade 86, Night of the Skywalkers this week. And I told Arn, I turned to him that day, I said, we going to count on you to carry this thing. We know Flay ain't going to be able to do shit with Nikita tonight. We going to count on you to carry it. And Arn looked me in the eyes and he said, big man, I'm going to do it. And then he did the Terry Funk special. He farted, sneezed, and came all at the same time. Ladies and gentlemen, the American Dream. Wow. What a great setup for Night of the Skywalkers.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's our show, yes. I think. And that's the match. Where do you go from there? So this was from the Greensboro, North Carolina Coliseum. Well, why did I blank on the word Coliseum there? From November 27th, 1986, I chose this match for, I guess, three reasons. One, I wanted to get an Arn Anderson tag match in here because you two had already chosen your matches, and spoiler alert, they are not tag matches. Mm-hmm. So I thought I would mix it up a little bit with Arn being known as, you know, a tag specialist for a large portion of his career. I also wanted to choose a match that was a little bit older, earlier in his career, that allows me to step out of my comfort zone as well. I'm not well acquainted with, you know, let's say pre-1990s wrestling, so it checks that box. And the third reason was, Jenny, I wanted you to see Ole Anderson.
I'm so glad that you wanted me to see Ole Anderson.
Do you have any questions about Ole Anderson before we...
How does Arn look older in 1986 than... I swear to God, in my match from like 94, he looked younger.
Now, here's the thing. A long-standing belief among wrestling fans is that Arn Anderson actually was born 40 years old. Am I correct, Tim?
That's correct, yeah.
And has basically been 40 years old for his entire life.
He's functionally ageless.
Yes, yes. Now, the thing about Ole Anderson that makes him interesting is he was actually born at 50 years old. And I swear to God, I challenge each of you, go online and see if you can find a picture of Ole Anderson where he ever looks young. I've seen pictures of him from 1972, and he looks like he's 55.
It can't be done.
Hasty white eyes.
They're not really related, correct?
No.
Okay.
No,
they correct. Look like they could be, though.
They do. Yeah. They look so similar. You're right.
That's the crazy thing is that, and neither of them, their shoot surnames are not Anderson in either of their cases. So these are their wrestling gimmick names. They worked in opposing territories briefly, and when Georgia Championship Wrestling and Jim Crockett Promotions merged, just made all the sense in the world to hook up the two Andersons of those respective promotions, especially considering they look like they could be brothers.
And they have amazing chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just like seamless. Like, they knew what each other were thinking during the whole match. Like, it just... I don't know. It was like one unit instead of a tag match.
I know what Arn was thinking during the match.
What was he thinking?
Holy shit, Ole's an ugly dude.
Yeah, he's...
not a handsome man.
I have an eclectic taste, but yeah, I mean, like, yeah. I would agree with that.
Them creamy thighs didn't do it for you?
No, very Ken Patera-esque.
Yeah.
In that regard.
Yeah.
Right. But, well, speaking of lookers, their opponents are the...
I love you for that.
Women love the Rock and Roll Express in the 80s. Holy, they would get more ass on the way to the ring than all of us combined have ever seen in our lives and ever will.
Sometimes those asses would shit on glass tables.
Well, as the story goes, yeah. But you pointed out, Greg, pre-show, that these guys, was it just for lack of options in the 80s? What?
You know, I've come to the conclusion, and I apologize if I'm offending anyone that's listening here, or my own mother, in fact, but women in the mid-80s apparently were idiots. Because Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson are two of the ugliest hillbilly bastards I've ever seen in my life. Good Lord.
And those outfits were not helping either.
Robert Gibson in particular has always looked like he was dropped on his head as a child. And Ricky Morton looks like the lady that cut my hair a few weeks ago. The women are just screaming for them.
Oh,
every
my God,
time.
Yes.
Well, and the I pop was gonna, when they come out.
Yes, it was huge. I was going to ask, because you don't see the crowd. Like, it's all in darkness. All you see is the ring and the cage. And It was so loud, and they were screaming so much. I was like, is this fake? Is it possible that this crowd is making this much noise? And I started to, like, question it. I'm like, this sounds like it's not real.
It seems that way, but at one time in wrestling, crowds made a lot of noise.
Well, it was overwhelming.
It's not like that anymore, but it used to be.
Well,
it
wasn't you could see in. The crowd now. So you
no,
could,
true, yeah. That's one of the interesting things about the Nitro era is that, you know, we got the more lit arenas. Lit. Yeah. And so you could see the crowds. But that back in the old Jim Crockett days, it was all the dark arenas, or as the Hulkster referred to them, the smoky arenas, brother.
That's right. Yeah, and I have to ask you guys, I'm obligated to ask, in fact, like most homes in the South, did your family keep a framed photo of the Rock and Roll Express on your mantle?
No.
Greg, you mentioned, you know, the women back then and your own mother, heaven forfend, this was a thing. I mean, it was... I can't explain it. I it's maybe you had to be there.
I used to think that Chris Jericho story had to be, you know, hyperbole in his book, you know, about the Kentucky family with the framed portrait of Ricky and Robert right next to Jesus above their mantle. But I think it's legit. No one in my family had it. My family were more, I think, into the Armstrongs and whatnot. But also a bunch of lookers in that family, and no, I believe this was a legitimate phenomenon, and I think that anybody that lived in the South that was a wrestling fan in those days, which would be the vast majority of the South, were fans of the Rock and Roll Express and their double dropkick finishing move.
Yes. The stunning double drop kick. For me, it was a framed photo of Magnum TA.
Oh my God! Yes,
that we had in the house.
Now I will say, I get that. I get that. I understand why Magnum TA was popular.
I mean, that's classy. Come on.
Yes, the shorts. You know, the hairy chest. The mom. His close, very close relationship with his mom.
Oh yeah, it's breathtaking. So we should get back to this match here. We should actually talk about the match.
That's not important.
A good change of pace, probably. this is coming like on the heels of a pretty long-running feud between Rock and Roll Express and the Horsemen. And I believe it was earlier in the year that Ricky Morton got that little singles title push against Flair. They did the angle where they, like, rubbed his face into the concrete. Maybe that's why he's not exactly a looker here.
He used to be good looking, and then the concrete thing that broke his nose changed him forever. Yeah,
right. So pretty heated feud, and this was this is an incredibly dominant year for the Horsemen, obviously, but the loss that they sustain here against RR. Was sort of the only chink in that year, one of the big chinks, certainly for them as a tag team, but that's what would lead to Ole getting booted from the group, of course. You know, he takes the fall here, they single him out as the weak link, and he's going to be gone for like a couple months and comes back early 87, they give him the heave-ho. And we get Horseman Lex Luger, which, Jenny, I know you'd be very much looking forward to seeing. Yeah.
Definitely not. No, I loved how Ole and Arn were completely dominant in this match. Mm-hmm. Like, they kicked ass. They just stomped the shit out of these guys and rubbed their fucking faces on the cage.
Yep. Which produced blood.
There was blood. It was blood. A lot of blood. It was great.
You get some blood. Yep.
And the ref, too, kept drawing my attention because he was working his ass off. And he
Wasn't
was
that Earl Hebner?
Yeah,
that
it was
I think
young
it was.
Earl Hebner. Yep.
Yeah.
Sure was. The ref, quite svelte.
Yeah. I mean, he was spry, and he was, like, just all over it, you know, just checking it and working it, and just, it was, I don't know. It was a lot going on.
Did it look like he was ever close to, like, just shoving Arn and saying, "That's it! I'm sick of it! I'm sick of all of it! The cage, the mat, all of it!"
The blood.
Well, Ole did shove him right before the match started. Like, get the fuck out of the way. It was pretty great.
Yeah, yeah, I love how that Rock and Roll Express formula just plays into the Andersons' game plan like that, where they're going to do Ricky's going to do the face in peril long segment, mm-hmm. which allows Arn and Ole to just completely dismantle him. Mm-hmm. You get their signature style of isolating the body part, working it over. Jenny, you mentioned them kind of seeming like they were moving as one, mm-hmm. in the way that they would make these quick tags, and just the continuity between what one would do into the other was just so solid. I don't think this is like an all-time match or anything. I just think it's a really good representative match for this team. And glad they got the big showcase on Starrcade. I don't totally love the finish. It's a little bit, a little bit abrupt, a little bit weak with Ole about to body slam Ricky Morton, and his partner Gibson just kind of drop kicks him in the back, and Ricky falls into the pin and gets the quick pin, so they don't really make the big babyface comeback that you expect from Rock and Roll Express, but it does play into the aftermath of this storyline with the Horsemen. So on that level, I guess it works, knowing where this is headed.
Yeah, so, they even stomp the hell out of the Rock and Roll Express as they're getting out of the ring.
Yes, mm-hmm. I love that. That was great.
Yeah, that was a great touch.
Yeah.
I've realized that I have like complex Rock and Roll Express feelings.
Oh.
Is that something I can trademark? I don't know.
Sure.
Because growing up, I was a little bit past the Rock and Roll Express era of them being in their primes when I can remember wrestling. By the time I can start remembering stuff really well, they were sort of fading out, and like the Road Warriors were kind of the big deal. And then in the WWF, the Hart Foundation, and then like the Rockers. Basically, I grew up watching what I think was a much better version of the Rock and Roll Express, which was the Rockers, Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty, in that they were athletes. And so, everything that the Rock and Roll Express did, except they did it with, like, cooler moves, and, it's easier for me to buy them, I guess. The Rock and Roll Express I've always struggled with looking back on because, I'm just like, in this match, for instance, Robert Gibson doesn't really do anything
in
the entire match. He just stands there. And then he does that weak drop kick at the end. Yep. And so it's hard for me sometimes with them. That being said, I love this match, and I always have loved this match. I really, in particular, I think sometimes I think people go overboard with Ricky Morton's the greatest seller of all time. But then I watch a match like this, and I'm like, no, I kind of get it because he's so, even me, who doesn't like the Rock and Roll Express particularly that much, I even felt bad for Ricky Morton at times in this match, just because every time he has a moment of hope, Ole comes over and just or Arn drops a knee on his arm or something. And he does such a good job of looking like a dude that's on his deathbed and in a lot of pain. And then on the other thing that we talked about earlier on, Arn is so good in this match. Every time he gets in did you notice that whenever Morton starts to make a comeback and look like he might get the tag, it's almost always with Arn in the ring and not with Ole.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because Ole has kind of got that tough guy image where he doesn't want to look quite as vulnerable as Arn looks. Mm-hmm. Arn gets in there, and Arn really, brace yourself, Jenny, shows some ass in the ring as Ricky Morton, fires up on him. And Arn's a much bigger guy, but Morton's hitting him with some believable punches. Arn's flopping onto his back and, folding all around onto himself and stuff, and just barely stopping him from making the tag. So I really appreciated both teams and how they played their roles in this match. In particular, Ricky Morton and Arn were the real standouts to me, although Ole did a hell of a job too. Gibson, I think, is a good wrestler, but he didn't get a chance to do much in this match.
Yeah, I think it's just it's kind of a truncated version of the Rock and Roll Express formula, where normally Gibson's spot would be getting the hot tag, coming in, and then Ricky sort of hulking up inexplicably after taking a complete shit-kicking for 45 minutes, but whatever, that's what they do. And sure, that just doesn't happen here because he doesn't get to make the hot tag. So that's probably what that comes down to. Jenny, what about you? Did you take away anything in terms of particular spots or other things that just stood out before we move on here?
Well, at the beginning, I was like, okay, this is a cage match, but they didn't seem to use the cage that much. Like, they would, they would throw the guys against it, and then it was not until probably halfway through before they start doing my favorite thing in the cage, which is rubbing the face on the cage. And
the old cheese grater spot.
Yeah, I love it. So yep. Great. That's my favorite. So then when the blood started flowing, I was like, okay, now the shit's heating up. And then the ending was, it was surprising because, you know, you had seen them beat the shit out of them this whole time, and then they lose the match. So it's, I liked it. I liked the surprise of it, and not really knowing what was going to happen at the end.
I guess if nothing else, you can see why Arn and the other horsemen would be pissed at Ole here for taking this loss. Like, come on.
It makes sense.
So all this, we've been beating on Morton, he's kicked out of everything, and you get pinned by him falling on
right,
you?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
So it's good story, too. It's good psychology.
And it kept the horsemen strong because it came off like a bit of a fluke that the R&R has won that. Right. So I don't know how the title followed after that, but I would assume that the Rock and Rolls didn't hold on to it for that long.
I don't think so, no. So that is the match that I chose. And
good choice, Tim. I enjoyed revisiting this and seeing how the horsemen were in their formative days and revisiting a tag team that I think that I've given short shrift to over the course of my lifetime in terms of the Rock and Roll Express.
I applaud you for being able to say short shrift. I have to take a long pause and a breath before I'm going to say those two words in combination.
So, all right. Well, speaking of which, let's take a long pause and a breath right now. And then when we come back, we will talk about our next two matches.
Outstanding segue.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Survey Says, Wrestling War Zone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective, No Holds Barred, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. On top of that, we're also dipping into the vault, re-releasing the entire catalog of Where the Big Boys Play for your enjoyment. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is loaded with great content, offering such tremendous shows covering the land of pop culture, such as Geek and Sassy, Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Sunday Groove, PTB in Play, Freak Out Drive-In, Songs with Friends, Looking Forward, Looking Back, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Conversation Comics, DC Post Crisis Management, Marvel Age, and Marvel Age Masterclass, plus weekly pod blasts that cover the gamut of comic topics. The feed is also filled with insightful sports content, including the NBA team, This Week in the NFL, and more.
And you can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com. We cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
You know, when I first came to the WCW, I looked around at a roster of guys that weren't over, guys who couldn't draw, guys in masks, guys from other countries, and I said, there's nobody here to work with. But one guy that I did like, from day one, bro, I liked Arn Anderson. I walked up to Arn Anderson backstage the first night we were there, and I told him to his face, nobody with a southern accent has ever gotten over in this business. And you know what Arn said to me? He said, what about me, Vince? I got over. And I said, you did, Arn, but you did it with an Arn accent, bro. That's the difference. And he never looked back again.
I would like to thank Vince Russo or Kevin Sullivan for that missive. Welcome back to Talking WCW, where we are talking WCW, having very complex WCW feelings.
Another show title.
Or perhaps we just have a WCW complex.
Or a military industrial suplex.
That as well. We are, of course, the Three Faces of Fear, the Ships at Sea. I am the Butcher here with Kevin Sullivan and Earthquake, the Shark.
The Shark, the Avalanche.
The Avalanche, yes. Thank you for joining us for our second half here. And we're going to get into our second Arn Anderson selection of the evening. This one coming your way from Jennifer Smith. And it is Arn Anderson versus Johnny B. Badd. Once again, another installment of Starrcade. This from 1994 from Nashville, Tennessee. Jenny, why did you choose this match?
Okay, so I researched Arn Anderson matches, and I watched a bunch, and then I kind of asked around to people that know what's up and got a couple of recommendations and watched those. And then out of everything that I watched, this was the most different Arn that I had seen. Like, just so full of piss and vinegar in this match, and it was highly entertaining, and like the wrestling of it is like pretty much secondary to the reason that I liked it. It was just everything else, the spectacle around it, and the just the complete attitude that Arn had during this match. So when he comes out to begin with, he's just like jawing. He's just like talking the whole time walking down the ramp and just, you know, just looking very intimidating and just talking trash. And it's just instantly like, oh shit, you know, like
along with his excellent manager, Colonel Robert Parker.
Exactly.
Yes.
And
yes.
Ming back there.
Ming.
Looking tough.
Ming in
too.
A suit. Yes. Hashtag Ming in a suit.
Not as good as Ming in sweatpants, but I'll allow it. And then Johnny B. Badd comes out, and then the place goes fucking crazy. I mean, they just love him, and I mean, I've seen this before, like seen how the crowd reacts to him. I never understand it. Like, I don't get it at all.
Don't feel weird. We didn't understand it at the time either, but we liked him.
Did
it's
you?
The bad,
I was gonna
it's
ask.
The bad
like,
blaster.
Everybody wanted him to bad blast all over.
Why?
It bad blasted in the face. He had dual.
He
bad
had two.
Blaster.
Yeah.
Bad blasters.
That was
double
amazing.
Barrel bad blaster.
Boy, apparently WCW, and I was one of them, so I can speak to this. WCW fans in the mid 90s apparently loved confetti, so I can only assume that Rip Taylor was a missed opportunity for a crossover for WCW.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was a mess. I mean, it was a giant mess. Even one of the streamers got caught over the camera at one point. And so it was just so extra, just everything at the beginning. I was like, okay.
And when you talk about Johnny B. Badd, you can't overlook the fact that he's as pretty as a picture, first of all. He looks just like Little Richard.
Looks just like Little Richard.
But you can't be fooled by his looks because he's got a mean left hook.
That's right.
And so if you don't want to end up sad, you damn sure don't want to mess with Johnny B. Bad. And I think the fans knew that at the time.
Well, I think if they didn't know that, they understood it after they heard his theme song, because there's nothing like a great expository WCW theme circa 1994.
You keep talking like that, Tim, you'll end up Steinerized.
Oh.
I'm literally holding a Sharpie right when you said that. Okay. So Bobby and Tony,
on commentary. And this is good, Bobby.
Yeah. It's good. He said at one point, should have bombed this town instead of Hiroshima.
And then Tony goes,
what the fuck?
And Bobby goes, oh, I said they should have dropped a bomb on this town instead of Hiroshima. He reminded me of Nick Duke in that. When I try to get him to backtrack on his controversial, insensitive comments he makes.
Doubles down on it. Yeah.
Doubles down
on it. Oh, God. It was so funny. And then Orange he's just talking the whole time. And I've always been like really into that, like with the wrestlers being very verbal in the ring with each other, with the crowd, and then Arn with the ref. Because like he would like appeal to the ref and be like, you know, acting like Johnny B. Bad was, you know, doing something wrong, and he was, you know, get him ref. It just a lot of animation.
Yes,
Arn.
A great line during that. Arn's complaining about Johnny B. Bad pulling his hair, and then Bobby goes, I think he pulled some scalp, too. And Tony goes, it'd be hard to do anything but.
Yeah, they did have a really good banter throughout this whole show, but they really do shine in this match. I took that away from it, too. And I think that a lot of the just nonstop chatter and smack talk coming from Arn is to sort of also cover that he's going to be calling a lot of spots in the ring, but he's such a pro and he's so good at it that he's going to make sure he covers that up so you don't notice it at home. You just think, oh, he's talking shit to his opponent here. Mm-hmm. But really, he's kind of like keeping the match together. Mm-hmm. And this match was just a really good example of Arn's ring generalship, if that's a word. It's a word now. I'm going to go ahead and declare it.
I like daddyship better, but like...
His daddyship?
Yeah, I mean, he just daddied the whole match, right?
Yeah, he sure did.
You know?
Yeah, because this was a last-minute kind of thing, because it was originally supposed to be the Honky Tonk Man.
Yes, boy, did we dodge a bullet.
Yes. Suffice it to say, I don't think Jenny would have selected Arn Anderson versus the Honky Tonk Man.
I don't. Well, yeah.
Or, sorry, it would have been Johnny B. Bad versus the Honky Tonk Man.
Yeah. Right. And Eric Bischoff fired Honky about a week before this in what he called, quote, one of the highlights of my career.
That's such a dick thing to say.
What an asshole.
I love it.
He said that on his podcast last year. So, yep.
It's such a dick thing, but when it's about the Honky Tonk Man, it's okay.
He really hated Honky Tonk Man. Yeah, apparently tried to hold Eric up for money, and he did this whole like big grandstanding play in front of a bunch of people, and Bischoff just called his bluff and said, go fuck yourself, and that was it.
Did he put Bischoff on the dreaded Honky Tonk Man ass whip list that he used to have Scott Keith on?
Oh, my God. Did he really?
Yeah. You don't remember that?
No.
That was hilarious back in the day. He made a Honky Tonk Man ass whip list. Good and on it were Lord. People such as Scott Keith and others, I'm sure. Mm. Jerry Lawler was on it.
Wow. That sounds very Honky Tonk Man. I don't know what to tell you. But Arn actually... pulling double duty on this show. He was in, which you wouldn't think watching it, but he had a dark match with tagging with Bunkhouse Buck against Greg Phillips' Family Portrait, the Armstrongs.
Yes.
So, kind of wish we had gotten to see that. But, you know, I think Arn knew that his duties would be needed here in this match against... Johnny B. Bad, but since there's not much of a story, he's sort of trying to make it up as he goes, and does an effective enough job of what he's given.
Yeah, and I also appreciated that there's enough left here on the table to make it look like Arn had this thing in control, and so it kind of builds the basis for their feud over the next few months, leading into, of course, Uncensored and the boxing match that Jenny referenced. So, speaking of boxing, one of the great everybody knows anything knows that Johnny B. Badd was a former boxer, Gold Gloves boxer in his day. Everyone knows that, common knowledge at the airports and whatnot. But in this match, Arn debuts in this. He's done this spot before. I think he even did it in the Rock and Rolls match. But it works perfect in this match when he's feuding with a former boxer, because he does this spot where he gets into a striking exchange with the boxer.
Yeah.
And he's being peppered with lefts and rights or whatever. And then Arn tries to do this wild swing, and he misses, and he falls right on his face. I love that spot. I love it.
Another one that I liked, I think he was doing like a abdominal stretch or some bullshit, and he kept putting his hand back up on the on the top rope, and then the crowd was like, "Oh shit!" And then the ref would look, and he'd take his arm off, and he did that like three times. That just like a
another great moment there on commentary is Bobby. He the referee goes over to Arn and he asks him, "Did you just have your hand on the rope?" And Arn, of course, she said no, and Bobby goes, "Yeah, what's he gonna say, dummy? Yeah, I have my hand on the rope. Break the hold."
It was just, it was so weird because they would do, like they would be like, in a, like a stretch or a submission hold or a rest hold. And then, real quick, there would be a flurry of great moves, like really great moves. And then somebody would pace off again, and it just kept it off balance. And like, you didn't know what was going to come next. And I just really liked the, it felt spontaneous. It didn't feel rehearsed.
Yeah, I agree. Johnny B. Badd came off out of this looking a lot better than he did coming in, and that's kind of the ultimate compliment to pay to Arn Anderson, is he made his opponents look better than they looked coming in. And I thought all of his high impact, Johnny's high impact offense that he had looked great in this match. And Arn was also able to kind of, you know, work the mat with him a lot more than he's used to. And, you know, I think Tim and I have talked before about Johnny B. Badd was kind of an underrated wrestler in general, but particularly in a situation when he had the right opponent, somebody that knew how to pace the match and things of that nature. And I think this was a good example of that. Arn was just that guy that you could throw in there against darn near anybody on the roster, and it was going to be a good match, a good solid wrestling match.
Yeah, Johnny was having a pretty good 1994. I don't think he was as good as he would get like in 95, let's say.
Right.
But compared to what he started for, like, he was so god-awful when he debuted. I mean, just one of the worst, just drizzling shits. And by this point, he's more than capable, can really hold his own. And you're right that as good as he had gotten, Arn just sort of makes him that much better. And although there was no, again, no story to this match, it's just sort of thrown out there. It would not be their last encounter by any means. They go on to have kind of a pretty good rivalry over the television title.
Mm-hmm.
So first of more good things to come between these two.
Right, and you know, for Johnny, it was probably, I mean, what would you say, this and then the DDP feud were probably his two most memorable WCW feuds, I would say.
Yep.
And this is the one that kind of turned him around as a wrestler, really solidified him into what he would become.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. Okay, so before we go into our next, in our third and final match, I think we're going to hear from another one of Arn's colleagues.
Woo! Oh, big God. Man, thank you so much for asking me on the show. You know, when they told me, they pulled me aside the other day and they told me that Arn was getting celebrated here on the Place to Be Nation network, whatever the hell it is, I said, I'm going to be there. They offered me money. They said, hey, Rick, we're going to pay you. I said, of course I'll do it. Now, here's what you need to know about Arn. Now, Arn and I, we were a tag team for so many years in the Horsemen. Everybody knows that. We would party the towns. We'd go out all night long and paint the town white. We would do anything we needed to do. Now, one of the other things that we would do is we would read each other's minds, you know, and you could say that we had something of a symbiotic relationship.
Oh.
You know, Arn was like a symbiote in many ways. He was. He would be onto me, and I would be onto him, and, you know, we'd go out and we'd do all kinds of things. You know, I walked in, you know, one time I walked in on Arn, and Arn was in there. He had two ladies, one on each side of him. It was like that human centipede. And I said, hey, Arn, what the hell are you doing? It's 1987. We don't do that yet. And he said, Arn, Rick, what the hell are you talking about? I'm a human centipede. And I said, oh. And I left. And then me and Wahoo went out. And that, let me tell you, Wahoo McDaniel walked up to Ole in the bar. True story. Walked up to Ole in the bar, slapped him in the face. Ole didn't do a thing. I said, my God, what are you doing? I just bought around for everybody. The next morning, I walked into the hotel room. Arn was there. He looked the same as always. Ole was there, looked the same as always. We went out that night and wrestled 60 minutes. It was just simple as that.
Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair.
This show is lit, I'm telling you.
Wow.
I'm going to say, I did not need to hear about Arn Anderson being involved in a human centipede situation.
I did.
I don't know. I didn't think I needed to, but now I would disagree with my initial assessment.
Here's the problem with Rick's story. He said, how would he have even known to call it that in 1987?
Well,
there was no basis for it.
I feel like Ric Flair is, he's pretty elevated when it comes to things like this, right?
That's true.
I mean, experienced.
He's elevated.
He's been on top of the industry for
right.
so long.
Yes. He has a firm grasp of things.
Well, it's well documented that the pro wrestling industry has a way of warping the space-time continuum. Mm. I mean, how was Magnum T.A. running to his mother on the beach to a song that did not exist in 1986?
For another 30 years.
Tell me that.
That's a great question. And how was he running when he had been in a brutal car accident? It rendered him unable to even walk.
That may be the more important question, in fact. Well, I am so glad we heard from the Nature Boy. As we know, Arn Anderson is not just Rick's friend. He's his best friend.
best friend in the world.
All right, so that brings us into our third and final match. This was chosen by you, Greg Phillips.
That's right.
This is going to be Arn Anderson versus his best friend, Ric Flair, in a cage on Nitro. It was on October 9th, 1995, in Chicago, Illinois. Rematch from Fall Brawl. Greg, why did you choose this match?
I picked it because it was in Rosemont. So the real story that I picked this match is that I remember watching this match on Nitro, and I have not seen it since it aired. Mm. So this was, you know, a good, gosh, what is it now, 24 years almost, 23 and a half years ago that this match took place. Mm-hmm. And I haven't watched it since then, but I remember loving it when I was a kid because, you know, Nitro was still in its early days at this point. It had been on the air for about a month, and we're getting a freaking steel cage match main event between top-level talent. This was a far level removed from Raw being main evented by, like, you know, The Undertaker versus Damian Demento or whatever. This was like a legit main event match for a pay-per-view or something. And I picked this one instead of the more, you know, you might say that the Fall Brawl match between them would be a more, like, that's another one I haven't seen in a while. But I feel like everybody talks about that match, so I really wanted to revisit this one to talk about kind of how it holds up and what was going on. So this match came in the middle of the only time that they ever feuded with each other, Rick and Arn, that I'm aware of. They had been aligned with each other throughout the summer of 95, but they were having issues. Flair had gotten increasingly obsessed with defeating Hulk Hogan and just constantly wasn't able to do it. He kept eating the boot and the leg drop, brother. It didn't matter if he dressed in drag, if he brought in assistance, if he went to a lab and came up with a new form of kryptonite to attack Hulkamania. Nothing.
Well, if he bought the youth center on Baywatch.
Baywatch? He went to Baywatch, and he still couldn't stop Hulkamania. Uh-huh. And it was starting to drive him a little crazy. And so for a while over the summer, it looked as if Arn might be turning babyface and Rick might be, you know, playing a crazy heel that isolates his best friend. But by the time Fall Brawl rolls around, they're having an intense personal issue, and Arn has, you know, turned on Flair. Brian Pillman gets involved and helps Arn win and get the advantage on Flair. So then Flair is battling with Arn and Pillman for weeks on Nitro. They just keep getting the upper hand on him. He can't fend him off because he's on his own. So that leads to this steel cage match, supposedly to keep Brian Pillman from getting involved. Rick and Arn are going to settle their differences in the cage on Nitro. And I got to say, my memory of this match is that it was longer than it actually ended up being. I did not realize it was only like a 9-minute match. But it was very intense and very good. And, of course, the cage, as it always did in those days, did a horrible job of keeping interference out. Pillman comes out and interferes, and it all, of course, backfires on Rick, and he comes out a loser again. But I thought this was a great example of Arn and Rick having that insane chemistry that you referenced earlier, Tim, and that Rick referenced in his confessional a few minutes ago, where they did have this sort of symbiotic bond with one another, and that applied to each other as opponents as well as partners. I was a big fan of this match. I thought that it was intense. The chops from Flair were brutal. I thought Arn, you know, was vicious coming back at him. I thought they did everything short of get blood, which would have been nice.
Right.
But
yes.
But they were, they were in the very much in the standards and practices era of Nitro, and we're not allowed to get blood. And then, of course, after the match is over, Ric Flair cuts out an impassioned promo talking about how he's going to take on both of them if he can't find a partner in the next week. And this was, of course, setting up one of the all-time great heel turns where they would sucker Sting one final time into the Horseman.
Love it. Love it. Yeah, I was really glad that you chose this match because it was one I completely forgot existed. In my head, I thought that the only singles match between Arn and Flair was at Fall Brawl. While I've watched those early Nitros, and this, by the way, was only, what, the fifth or sixth episode of Nitro,
yep,
probably.
Yep.
And you bring up a really good point about how we're so used to seeing these kinds of pay-per-view caliber matches on free TV today, and that was so not a thing back then. That didn't start until the Monday Night Wars, when every single week you would get a huge match for free on the weekly television shows. And, yeah, I can see how, while I wasn't watching at the time, unlike young Greg Phillips, that would have been just such a huge, huge big deal and game changer in the fall of 1995. And we've really never looked back since then. So, yeah, glad that you came up with this one. Just to remind me that this actually existed. And somewhat surprisingly, we see Arn getting the win. Once again, he is two for two over Flair because, as you mentioned, he also won that match at Fall Brawl. So, continuing that story of Flair just having no one to turn to now, Arn, his best friend, who's always been in his corner, has abandoned him, and that desperation just boiling over that not only does he no longer have anyone to back him up, but the guy who was always sitting in his shadow is the one who's now beating him.
And not only beating him, but beating him with a Ric Flair tactic. Beating him in his own game by having somebody interfere and distract, reaching into his trunks, pulling out the foreign object, the knuckle dusters, and knocking Rick out and getting the pin over him. A nice, brilliant touch to this, which was really the best. I mean, Nitro had some really cool stories going on at this time. This was, to me, the best of them. I loved this story. Loved how they built it, the subtle touches on it, and the knuckle dusters, which leads to the great exchange of the commentary booth of Heenan saying, "I didn't see anything," and then Mongo goes, "That looked like good old-fashioned Chicago brass knuckles to me."
Good old manga.
And then Flair just breaks the fuck out of Eric's headset. I love that shit. I mean, he was just a fucking madman. And because I was like, oh shit, because this is the only out of the three, this is the only match that Arn won.
Right, you know, and probably the most surprising one that he wins.
And so I was like, oh shit, Flair lost. I'm like, oh shit, he's fixing to go crazy.
Anderson, Pillman, next week I'll search the world. And maybe I don't find a partner, but if I don't, I'll take you on by myself.
So great.
Tremendous.
I liked how Brian Pillman just jumped, like, he just kind of like swan dived onto the cage and just climbed it like a monkey. Yeah.
He was a madman.
Yeah, he was crazy as hell.
Well, that cage was threatening to just fall apart.
It looked rough. Real rough. Was that that was before Klondike Bill, or was it after?
I think it was during. I think it was during. I think Klondike was distracted that night.
He might have been.
Yeah,
Klondike was digging for gold or something, and so to speak, and didn't construct that room. I was gonna say the one thing we didn't get out of this that I want in every Ric Flair cage match is where he gets run into the cage and then he goes, "Oh God." We didn't get that, unfortunately.
Or even the somewhat drawn out long, just, oh God.
One thing that was kind of annoying is there was a commercial break in the middle of it.
Yes, that's
so
true.
They had to do a replay, and then the replay was of Arn like busting his balls from the top rope.
Yeah, that was a great spot.
I was like, shit.
That was awesome. I know.
At least they do show the replay. You know, nowadays I think the wrestlers are better trained not to have anything actually happen during the commercial breaks. But
yeah, you notice it always comes back, and they're doing like this badass crazy thing after it's like, okay, they're sitting in a chin lock for like 2 minutes in front of the live crowd, and then here's like a 740 double suplex off the top rope or something.
Yes.
But yeah, in those days, they were just going at it the whole time, and well, so to speak.
Right.
And poor Arn, man, what a kudos to him, because he took that top rope crotching.
Well, and you see a lot of what you had referenced, Greg, how for a big guy, he does that pinball bumping well.
Oh, yes.
He's just bouncing all over the ring, which
is so beautiful.
Selling the chops in a way that so few people ever did for Rick, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you expect that from a Shawn Michaels or a Mr. Perfect, but somebody the size of Arn just bouncing all over the place like that is.
And I think that's one of the reasons why, I don't know if you were like this too when you were younger, Tim, but I always thought of Arn as a smaller guy, and I don't know why that is, but I think maybe one of the reasons is because he bumped like that. He did the pinball bumping, he flopped around, and so I always associated him as being more of like a Curt Hennig size. Now, I never met Curt Hennig, but I believe that Arn was probably quite a bit bigger than Curt.
Yeah. No doubt. But I would agree. I'm done with like another probably 10 minutes of this match.
Yeah, sure.
Really.
With blood.
Well, I mean, it's hard to fit time onto a show that's got big star-studded matches like Sting defeating the Shark to retain the WWE United States Championship. Sabu defeating Mr. JL.
There you go.
And Big Bubba Rogers defeating Road Warrior Hawk by countout.
Yeah, those early days in Nitro, man. Mm. So I do wonder one thing. Greg, maybe you know the answer to this. And Jenny, this would be spoilers for you, if not for the fact that I know you've seen Halloween Havoc at least three times.
Yes.
This, of course, leads to the aforementioned great turn on the hapless Sting.
Yes.
Or naive Sting.
Yes. So I just wonder, was it ever clarified if Arn and Flair were feuding for real and then decided at some point that they were going to hook up? Or was this all just a huge, elaborate ruse from the beginning?
Now, I don't know, and somebody that's a listener can hopefully correct us on this or put us on the right course. I don't know. When I was a kid, my assumption is I was a big Sting fan. Everybody knows that. When I was a kid, I thought that it was a plan from the beginning, that this whole thing was an elaborate ruse to trick Sting one more time. Because Ric Flair, for whatever reason, the character of Ric Flair got his rocks off on tricking Sting. And so that was like his favorite thing.
He hadn't done it in a while.
Yeah, it's like his favorite things in life were having sex with women and tricking Sting, and not in that order. And so I was a kid, I thought there was a big elaborate ruse. But having watched this match, Tim, I have to say, I've changed my headcanon on that. Because there's no way. There's just no way that you're going to get hit in the head with wrapped up brass knuckles or whatever the hell they were. And as part of a ruse, you'd have to be a fool. So I'm thinking that when this all started, that perhaps Flair was earnestly pleading to Sting to be his partner to help him take on Arn and Pillman, because he was legitimately angry with them. And then after Sting coming out and humiliating Rick by turning him down on national television, I think that might have been the point, or over a course of several weeks. I think at some point, Rick and Arn got in the room together and they said, you know what, we've had our issues, but I realize now, Flair realizes he's suddenly thinking clearly again. And he said, I know what we need to do. We need a good old-fashioned Sting beatdown to reunite us and get us back on the same page. And so Arn said, you know what, Rick? I've been waiting for you to say this for the last year. Let's do it. Let's trick Sting. And so they did.
Beating Sting's ass is a team-building exercise.
Yes.
I'm really into it. I think that would have to be my headcanon, too, because that turn in the tag match at Halloween Havoc is so good that you kind of don't really think about it. But when you go back to the early fall, like Fall Brawl and everything leading up to that, I mean, it had nothing to do with Sting. Like, he was not part of the equation until
Sting
shortly.
Was being used exclusively as the peacemaker between Luger and Hogan and Savage.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not until shortly before Havoc that he gets involved in this thing. So, I'm glad they could have that shared experience of reuniting, reforming the Horsemen, and, could do it over kicking Sting's ass.
Absolutely. It was the one thing that united the Horsemen together was their love of tricking that poor young man. And I think that if you go back and have to do a what-if comic about this, you could say, what if Sting had just accepted Flair's offer from the get-go? Maybe Flair doesn't feel spurned. Maybe Flair doesn't suddenly have the desire to trick Sting again and to humiliate Sting the way that Sting had humiliated him. Maybe everything would have been fine for the Stinger. But instead, he rebuffs Flair's advances, only to later accept them, but by then it was too late.
Mm. Amazing.
Poetic.
Well, let me ask this. Did you guys have any quick honorable mentions for Arn matches?
I almost went with either of the two Hogan matches on Nitro.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't really want to say any more about, but I think those are pretty notable. Good reason.
Yes. Perhaps we will one day do a WCW pre-NWO Hogan episode.
Oh, God.
This is true, yeah.
There's just so many to count. One of the people on my Twitter timeline was tweeting the other day about a match between Arn and Bobby Eaton from Super Brawl.
Mm-hmm. That's a good match. That's a really good match.
And so I was thinking about picking that one out for this project, but wanted to go a little bit later with my pick. With Arn, and then of course I could literally fill it up with tag matches. Anderson might be the greatest tag team match worker of my lifetime, because whether it was with Tully, which is of course the team that most people remember, with Ole, with his tag team with Bobby Eaton was awesome. Mm-hmm. And everybody forgets them, but they were a fantastic tag team. And, of course, his matches with Rick, with Barry Windham, I mean, the dude, you could put him in any – he was like the Cesaro of his day. You could put him in any tag team, and it was going to be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned tag team partners. Hell, I came real close to pulling the trigger on Arn and Larry Zbyszko versus Dustin Rhodes and the returning Ricky Steamboat from that one clash. I'm not going to try to do the number.
I believe you mean the cruncher, Larry Zbyszko.
The cruncher, Larry Zbyszko. That's right.
Oh, he hit the pole.
Yeah.
There was a one that I really liked, and it was very different than, of course, the one that I ended up picking, which it was at Super Brawl 94 with Steven Regal, and it was like super technical and like detailed, but like compelling. So it was like a whole like spectrum of stuff of his that I watched, and that was another one that stuck out for me.
That is a somewhat divisive match.
Is it? Why?
Well, I don't know if I'll even say that because it's probably not a match a lot of people have seen, but I've heard everything from it's a five-star match to, boy, why are they doing this 70s shit in 1993?
I kind of dug it, honestly.
Yeah, I think it comes down to Regal's style in general is very divisive. And it's almost like you have to be in the mood for it, you know? Like I love Regal's style when I'm in that mood. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes I'll watch a match and I'm like, God, this is so boring. Mm-hmm. But most, I mean, you know, and it kind of goes back and forth, but I love it when it's good. So like I was super into Regal at that time too. Like when I was a kid, 93, 94, I loved Regal because he was the only guy that was doing that stuff. Like, those weird, complex wrestling counters. I was all over that shit when I was a kid. And I'm probably more desensitized to it now because everybody tries to do that style. But, like, but yeah, he was great at it. And I don't know that I remember seeing that match, actually. I don't think I've ever seen that Super Brawl, to be honest with you.
You should watch it.
It's a very good Super Brawl.
And it could be that Arn is just that good, you know what I'm saying, that he makes it what it is, and he adapts to Regal's style and makes it look even better.
And a weird thing about that, I really like the Regal and Larry Zbyszko matches from that year, which is really weird.
Yeah.
But, like, I really, when I was a kid, I always liked those matches, and I don't really give a shit about Larry Zbyszko, but...
Who does?
Larry Zbyszko.
Yeah, it's one of those, you gotta know what you're signing up for with Regal, and if you are in the mood for it, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But if you don't know, you're about to see literally a 30-minute mid-card match on the Super Brawl. You might be a little turned off by that.
Mm. A lot of Greco-Roman knuckle locks.
A lot of small joint manipulation. Actually, not really. But, I will say that I was glad that of the three matches we chose here for our official examination, we saw the Spine Buster.
Yes.
In 2 out of 3. That's an absolute with any Arn Anderson expose.
Well, yes. Arn can manipulate my small joints any day. So.
And break your back any day.
Bust that spine,
make you,
baby.
Make you humble any day. Gene Mean.
Gene Mean.
Fuck the Arn Anderson.
All right.
Do we have another tribute?
We have another tribute from the legendary former world champion, the Iron Sheik.
Fuck the Arn Anderson. He come here with the A to the Z. He tell the Sheik, you know, baby, you no taking the A to the Z when you wrestled me. I say, fuck you. You with your bald head, your fat belly. You're no Iron Sheik. You no number one. You no Carl's Row.
A ringing endorsement from the Iron Sheik here.
Amazing.
For Double A.
All right.
Enforcer.
So complimentary.
Do we want to plug shit, or we're just going to skip all that?
Yeah, I suppose we can get some plugs in before we get out of here. will say that I was glad we did this. And, you know, don't think that just because we covered Arn Anderson in our first and our debut episode that we won't necessarily revisit him. Just because we do a wrestler doesn't mean we're only going to do him once. Mm.
That's right. We might do it multiple times.
We might do it multiple times. So just keep that in mind. If there's more stuff you want to see from Arn Anderson.
What if this just turns into an Arn Anderson podcast?
What if it did?
Holy shit. I was just thinking that. And I was like, I don't need to say that because I've already said too many things like that. And then you said it. And I'm kind of into that idea.
Oh, no. Well,
talking double A.
Oh, God. Oh, okay. God.
Yeah, I'm glad we did this too, guys. This was a lot of fun and a nice walk down memory lane.
No doubt. Greg, where can listeners find you? Where else in the land of the village, the great village that is Place to Be Nation?
Well, of course, folks can catch me on the Place to Be Nation pup feed every week with my longtime companion and cohort, Nicholas Duke. We are the Hard Traveling Fanboys. We report to you live from Ho Ho Loon Plaza in the L-shaped studio every single week. And we have just recently reviewed the unaired television pilot of Aquaman. And that was a fun episode that I hope everybody will check out. And this coming week, we're supposed to, if I can get it read, review Batman RIP, the somewhat divisive and frankly not very good Morrison Batman story. And then, other than that, you can find me on Twitter at gphillips8652. That's G-P-H-I-L-L-I-P-S 8652. And you can, of course, find me at Place to Be Nation Comics on Facebook. We love to have people engaged there and discussing things. And other than that, I mean, gosh, if you just say the words Zer and R, I think I might appear.
Keep that in mind. Jenny, where can the good folks at home find you?
I'm also on the pop feed. I am at Jenny Cruz 2814 on Twitter. And we have a new Talk and Pop going to be recorded soon. And a new Geek and Sassy going to be recorded soon. And right now you can hear an episode of Freak Out Drive-In where Justin and I watch Suburban Commando because that's a very scary horror movie that he chose.
In some respects, yes.
Freak out.
I think that's all of mine. What about you, Tim?
Well, yes, you can find that episode of Talking Pop on the Place to Be Nation Pop feed whenever we do record it, which we will be doing soon, Jenny. And also, I am one quarter of the Marvel Age podcast with Greg Phillips's co-host from Hard Traveling Fanboy, Nick Duke, also with Russell Sellers, also with the manager, Todd Weber. Find me on Twitter at Cyke68, C-Y-K-E-68 on Twitter, and send us your feedback on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Facebook group as well, or on below34.proboards.com. Did I get that right?
Very well done.
Thank you. And Place to Be Nation live chats as well, Messenger group. If you're a part of that, you know about it. If not, then hit us up. Let us know you'd like to be added. We can talk some Arn Anderson or anything else in the world of WCW because we are talking WCW. And
we might even let off some steam in there on occasion.
We might. You never know. In our second episode coming next month, we'll be talking either more Arn Anderson or a different subject altogether. Remains to be seen. We'll figure it out. We'll let you know. And so, for Greg Phillips, Jennifer Smith, I am Tim Capel. To all the other ships at sea passing in the night, we will see you next time.